Hi, it's Karen Webster for Payments.com, and I'm here today with Ralph Danglemaier, CEO of BlueSnap. Ralph, thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome, Karen. Great to be here.
It's always nice to have you on. So the topic of conversation today is fraud. Obviously something that the payments ecosystem is talking a lot about as we approach the October 1st liability shift date, but generally it's a topic of conversation. And I think what brought it to mind for me is some data that LexisNexis released recently that suggested that fraud is increasing a lot, 94% from last year, about 1.32% of total revenue. Why is that the case, even though all of us here in payment seem to be so focused on keeping fraud in check?
Well, I agree those numbers are very, very high. And I think the reason that it's so high is we've had a lot of data breaches this year at major retailers, Target, Home Depot, as you know. And every time those breaches happen, card data is put online for sale. So fraudsters can actually go out and buy your card information. Now, it's a lot harder for them than to make a fake card and go swipe it somewhere. So the easiest thing for them to do is to start using fraud online or card not present. So I think that's one of the big drivers for increased fraud. I think second thing is that the fraud systems online haven't necessarily been adapted or upgraded yet to actually catch all of this fraud that's going on. And we've particularly seen here that fraud has definitely been up a lot around the country, and we've put a focused attention on this to reduce fraud actually by 86% with our merchants as of date.
Wow. So you're able to reduce fraud 86% for your merchants?
That's what we've done year to date. That's correct.
So how do you do that?
Well, there's a lot of ways to do that. First of all, we can actually check to make sure a lot of the cards aren't stolen cards. We can actually put rules in place by country, by currency, to find out what our typical fraudsters doing. Like a lot of them will start with small transactions, maybe under $5 to validate the card, and then they'll start making rapid purchases quickly. We also can check to see, boy, it's funny, somebody at the exact same time from, say, the Ukraine is buying at two different spots in the United States. Boy, that seems odd. We'll stop and do a manual review on those transactions. So it's really about monetization and rules to try to catch some of this fraud.
So you mentioned international and that being a trigger point. And again, this particular study suggested that international and mobile commerce merchants are really taking the brunt of this increase in fraud. From your perspective, what makes those groups so vulnerable and what can they do about it?
So I agree with that, and a couple reasons making it vulnerable. Number one, it's a lot easier to mask the IP on a mobile phone, so it's hard to figure out where the person's coming from, where they're buying from, so that makes them more vulnerable. Second thing is everybody's really bent on trying to have a real frictionless, simple checkout experience. Well, the less data that you enter on a checkout means that it's really hard to start tracking fraud because there's less things to go on, like name, address, or phone number to verify the information. So it makes it easier for the fraudsters to start stealing the information in the cards.
So you mentioned a good point, and we'll get back to this in a minute, but obviously making things easy for the consumer is a big focus. And to your point about detecting fraud is harder, sometimes what happens is fraud just gets tightened up all the way around. And so a lot of declines are, in fact, for good customers who shouldn't be declined, 25%. Is a number that we hear flying around. So what can merchants do to avoid really declining their best customers and instead focusing on the guys that really present the problems for them?
Yeah, so this is a work in progress for a merchant. I mean, merchants really need to dedicate somebody to look at fraud, look at the logic, look at where it's coming from, understand where their best customers are, understand their buying patterns, try to put rules in place, and make sure they really understand the data so they can start to minimize these false positives, which is a big deal right now. I think the second thing merchants can do, which we tend to educate folks on, is that the more local acquiring you can do, the better. So if you're in Germany and you're buying from a bank in California, or Bank of California is acquiring your transaction, that bank in California may not be used to dealing with cards issued, say, in Germany. So they're going to be more apt to decline things that they don't see as well, where if that transaction went into Germany or somewhere in Europe, they might be more apt to have the rules to deal with that kind of buying. So what we call a card issuing, card acquiring mismatch and a currency mismatch creates more false positives. And so this is a question that we really think merchants should be asking when they're trying to work through their frictionless checkout. And right now, quite frankly, our merchants just don't even ask those questions as they're going through the payment gateway process.
So they're not asking questions about fraud. They're asking questions about just make it easy for consumers to buy using their mobile device?
That's right. They're saying, we want a frictionless checkout. We want a low rate. How do we do this? And then the fraud questions come later when they have a problem.
So that seems like the reverse order, kind of. It should be. The two things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
That's right. I think the question should be, we're trying to create a frictionless checkout process, and we're trying to do it in a way that optimizes how we're going to not have so many false positives. How do you do that today? What does your fraud engine rule look like? How do the rules get in first place? Where do you send your acquiring transactions? Those are questions that merchants should be asking their banks, their acquiring banks or their gateways.
So you touched on something a few minutes back where you talked about merchants really not addressing this because it requires that they have people to really look at this problem and address it for them. And one of the things, again, going back to this study, that this study pointed out is that for every $100 of fraud, retailers spend about twice that, maybe even a little more. And a lot of that is because of manual reviews of things that are exceptions or perhaps viewed as suspicious. Obviously, there has to be a better way than just having human beings manually checking this stuff. How are you advising merchants to address the problem so that fraud doesn't cost them a lot, and the manual review of fraud doesn't cost even more?
Yeah, that's a great point. The manual review is obviously is the last effort, right? Because it does a couple of bad things in a way and good things in stopping fraud potentially. But think about it. You're online buying something from a Williams-Sonoma, and all of a sudden it says, hold on, we need to wait, and we have to check to see if this transaction is good. So the merchant's online hanging and waiting for actually a human to come on and try to verify this transaction. It could be done in 5 minutes. It could be done the next day, depending on where they are. It's actually the opposite of what the merchant wants. It's a non-frictionless process, right? That's costing a lot of time and energy. So the logic of having a really good rules engine that can detect this stuff and constantly tweaking the rules weekly is really the answer, so that you can minimize these manual reviews so that you don't have this bad customer experience and it doesn't cost that much. I think the second thing that we recommend is there's got to be tools in place to quickly identify if a fraudulent transaction does get through. You use tools that allow you to do quick refunds to merchants. And we find many merchants, as a matter of fact, 98% of our merchants don't even use these tools. So we're constantly advising them to use these tools because these tools cost a little bit of money to put in up front, but it saves a ton of time on the back end. And the ROI is going to get there as people start doing studies like this one right here, which I really believe in.
So it sounds like there's an opportunity to refocus the conversation with merchants. I mean, there's a lot obviously coming at them, and they all want to take advantage of the mobile opportunity, but perhaps steering the conversation in a way that doesn't suggest mobile without some of these other tools incorporated in their mobile commerce solutions are things that they should be focused on as well. How are you having those conversations with merchants?
Carefully. because you know, the honesty of it is the person that's making the decision at many of these merchants, and you have to segregate them a little bit, from small business to middle market merchants to large corporates, but a lot of the middle market to small merchants, the person making the decision on how they're going to do checkout is usually a product marketing person or a technology person. And quite frankly, they don't have any experience in fraud. So to walk in and tell them, look, these are the different tools you have to buy, and this is the different way you have to create your frictionless checkout, is sort of a hard conversation because they just want to get their product implemented in a way that looks really cool and is easy to check out, and sort of someone else's problem to deal with the fraud and the chargeback. So it isn't really an easy conversation with them because they just really don't want to talk about it.
So they don't bring in the risk guys as part of the conversation, or is that up to you to suggest that they do that?
It's really, we find the burden's on us to suggest they do that because a lot of these merchants don't really have a payments or a risk person, or if they do, it's sort of like somebody in the finance group who's kind of start wearing the hat because they're starting to deal with refunds and chargebacks, and they're saying, wait a minute, how do we get to this point? What do we need to do to start preventing this? And they start to become wearing the risk hat, sort of defaults into that, so to speak.
Well, there's certainly a lot more to talk about on this particular topic and a lot of educating to do on the part of these product people at merchants so that they don't implement something that does something good for the consumer, but yet something very bad for the organization overall from a risk and security perspective. Thanks, Ralph. It was really great to catch up with you today.
Thanks, Karen. Great being on again.